This is a download from the Post-Keynesian Economics Study Group, PKSG. For more information and terms of use, please visit www.postkeynesian.net.
Philip?
Thank you, Nina. And can I just say how grateful I am for the invitation? But more importantly, I think, and I should say this, I'm so sorry Vicky couldn't stay, to thank her for what we did back in the 1980s, when we managed to get some money from the ESRC, and I emphasize that because I want to come back to that, in order to create this post-Keynesian study group, which later Sheila Dow and others promoted. But more recently, I can see a number of faces here, Mark, Oslem, Engelbert, Fontana, and I'm sorry if I missed any other names. I'm really grateful to see that it continues, and more importantly, that it now organizes this annual event, which I don't think we did at the time with Vicky, for the very simple reason, I believe, that we had a lot of seminars in London, not Cambridge. And there was a very good reason for that, that London, you do get crowds. Cambridge, unfortunately, there are the difficulties, the distance and so on and so forth, which doesn't allow so many audiences. And I feel a little bit guilty that I have been able to support as much as I should the seminars at Cambridge. So really I'm delighted that this continues, and I wish you all the best for the future. Thank you very, very much indeed for this invitation. Now, the title, Paolo, can you hear me properly?
Perfect.
Even now?
Yes.
Thank you. So that's the title, the distribution effects as one of the main great causes of the Great Recession. Let me just get my time right. So let me just try to summarize what I want to say, just in case Nina tells me off that I consume more time than I should. So what I do with this contribution, by the way, I see a number of faces who have seen this kind of contribution before, and I do apologize if I repeat myself too much. I try not to. So in terms of the causes of the Great Recession, I distinguish between the main factors and the contributory factors. The main factors are distributional effects, financial liberalization, and financial innovation. And I begin with distributional effects for a very good reason, in that not many people have mentioned distributional effects as a main cause of the Great Recession. Although, to be brutally honest, more recently there have been a lot of people, and from unexpected quarters, that support the idea that distributional effects have had a major role to play in terms of the Great Recession. And of course there are people who are either not mentioning it at all, as for example in the United States, parts of the so-called Dodd-Frank Act of July 2010, there is a document of 662 pages, and there is not a mention of the word distribution or distribution now. And there are more recently some papers from the BIS that suggest, and they produce evidence, that over the last 150 years, they cannot produce evidence where distribution caused crisis. Now, so that's where we are. But I think distributional effects are very, very important, and as I am going to show you in a minute, how important they have been in terms of this particular crisis. And these distributional effects have been helped greatly by the financial liberalization attempts throughout the world, but especially in the United States, because we are talking about the United States, where these crises emerged. And this financial liberalization started in the mid-70s in the United States and culminated in 1999, when we had in the United States the repeal by President Nixon of the 1933 Glass-Steagall Act. The Glass-Steagall Act of 1933 was introduced, because these two senators, Glass and Steagall, wanted to avoid the enormous risk-taking by the commercial and investment banks, which had been together in the 20s, and in view of their risk-taking created the what we now know and label as the Great Depression. And indeed, after 1999, the financial liberalization, which had enormously distributional effects to emerged, created what we now know as the combined efforts of the commercial and investment banks, which after 1999 had so much liquidity, they didn't know what to do with it, and they helped enormously the expansion of the parallel banking sector, which had already been created in the mid-1990s. It was not successful up to 1999 or thereabouts, for the very simple that it relied on assets whose values were fluctuating all the time, and they couldn't make the profits that they needed to continue. And after 1999, because of this enormous expansion, or increase rather, in the prices of housing, this parallel financial sector, which was borrowing from the mother companies, the traditional and now combined commercial and investment banks, and at a shorter rate of interest, and lending this money at a long-term rate of interest to anybody who wanted to buy a house, what has come to be known as the subprime mortgages. So long as the rate of interest, the short-term rate of interest, was lower than the long-term rate of interest, this parallel banking sector was making enormous profits. And it was expanding quite substantially. By January 2008, this parallel banking sector, its size is twice as big as the traditional commercial and investment banks put together. It all went very well for them until about 2006-2007, but definitely by August 2007, when we had the reversal of interest rates. Long-term rate of interest became lower than short-term rate of interest. They began to suffer huge losses, and by August 2007, this parallel banking sector simply froze, and along with the freezing of this parallel banking sector, we have the freezing of the traditional banking sector, the financial crisis, which of course was spread into the real sector, creating what we now know as the Great Recession, not depression. Might I add, we could have had the Great Depression, and I really believe that thanks to the then British Prime Minister, who in April 2009 persuaded the 20 countries that they had these meetings to go for some expansion, and probably, and we need to do a little bit more work there, saved us from having the second Great Depression, only to have the Great Recession. And then, of course, with political events, for example here with the Conservatives going for austerity, things change quite dramatically. And what I would like to do if I had more time is, once I've gone through all these, to talk a little bit about policy implications, but I'll do that now before I talk more about the rest of it, that all the events following August 2007 implied that the theoretical model that people had been pursuing, especially the central banks, what we call, as I said earlier, the new Keynesian or the new consensus macroeconomics, without the monetary sector, without all sorts of other things, without the possibility of having distributional effect, I think that would have to be changed quite substantially. And I'm delighted that some people in the audience are trying for a different kind of macroeconomic theoretical framework. But most importantly is the policy implication, namely inflation targeting, which would have to be abandoned. I'm not the only one who's saying that. BIS, for example, had a couple of papers arguing that probably we've seen the end of inflation targeting. I don't think we have seen it yet, but let's hope that we soon see it. And in its place, I suggest we have monetary and fiscal policies which are coordinated along with an objective of high growth, full employment, etc. But more importantly, from the point of view of my discussion, is distributional effects. But also, in view of what happened in August 2007 and what had been going on in terms of regulation of the financial system, where we only had microprudential regulation, it's very important to begin to worry about financial stability, namely that we worry about both microprudential and macroprudential type of policy. So, you know, the analysis which I undertake implies all those kind of economic policy implications. So I could stop there, Nina, but I want, because I have another 10 minutes, to say a little bit more about the other bits and pieces which I haven't touched quite yet. So, main contributory factors, I hope I persuaded you even very briefly, that distributional effects, financial liberalization, and financial innovation are really very important, but there are contributory factors, which are the international imbalances, the enormous expansion of China and the enormous creation of savings, not just in China, but in the rest of the Southeast Asian countries, following the June 1997 crisis, created an awful lot of savings which were channeled into Wall Street. That enormous expansion in liquidity meant that people began to spend from short-term assets, the liquid assets, there were too much of that, into long-term assets, which helped what I suggested earlier, the reversal of interest rates, namely long-term interest rates coming down and short-term interest rates going up in the United States. So those international imbalances helped. It was a contributory factor rather than the factor which created the crisis. Monetary policy at the same time had a lot to do with it because of the low rate of interest, especially after the crisis in the States, especially of the computer a crisis we had in March 2000, and especially after November 2001, we had a long period of very, very low, extremely low interest rates, which promoted the kind of problems that I have enumerated. And thirdly, there is the role of credit rating agencies. And we know that the role of the credit rating agencies had a lot to do with, you know, promoting the crisis, because we know now that a lot of the assets which they rated as AAA, by August 2007, it became clear that really they were 0, 0, 0. So all these aspects, they were contributing to the crisis which we now know as the Great Recession. But let me tell you a little bit more about these distributional effects. I have to follow my slides very carefully because there are a lot of codes and a lot of numbers which I couldn't possibly remember very, very well. Now, in terms of distributional effects, the steady but sharp rise in inequality, especially in the United States, but not just in the United States, elsewhere too, as I suggested, it is an important feature. And let me give you some codes. Galbraith, in a recent paper, suggests, and I quote, inequality was the heart of the financial crisis. The crisis was about the terms of credit between the wealthy and everyone else, is mediated by mortgage companies, banks, rating agencies, investment banks, government-sponsored enterprises, and the derivative markets unkept. And I think that, you know, agrees with the brief discussion that we've had so far. Another contribution by Rajan in 2010, and I quote, the top 1% of households accounted for only 8.9% of income in 1976, but this share grew to 23.5% of the total income generated in the United States by 2007, unquote. Also, your colleague Robert Waite from the LSE was saying again another recent contribution, and I quote, the richest 1% of American households owned about 35% of national wealth in 2006-2007, the last year for which statistics are available, a far greater share than in most other developed countries, unquote. Evidence by Atkinson and others recently also shows that the share of United States total income going to top income groups had risen dramatically prior to 2007. The top pre-tax decile income share reached almost 50% by 2007, the highest level on record. The share of an even wealthier group, the top 0.1%, has more than quadrupled from 2.6 to 12.3% over the period 1976 to 2007. Real wages had fallen even behind productivity well before the onset of the Great Recession. The declining wage and rising profit share were compounded by the increasing concentration of earnings at the top, especially in the financial sector. Now, I have a couple of figures to quickly show. Let me just summarize and then show you the figure. Figure one makes a case of the increasing U.S., I repeat, shortfall of the real wage rate from productivity since the early 1970s and increasing unemployment. The red is exactly what I have just said, and you can clearly see that from around the late, or around late 90s, no, even mid-90s, there is this sharp decrease. Unemployment, of course, was increasing. Next figure, figure two, plots the evolution of the share of the top 5% total income of households and household debt to GDP ratio over the period 1983-2000. And there it is. It's very, very clear what's happened. The red is household debt to GDP, and the other one is share of top 5% of income distribution. Figure 3, which I think is most important from the point of view of this analysis, shows the share of profits in relation to income in the case of the US and of the rest of the world. It also shows the case of the financial sector. The top two lines is what happened to profits up and down over the period, but look at the profits going to the financial sector. The bottom two lines, the blue one, is the rest of the world, and the other one is the financial sector in the United States. They have the same kind of figure in terms of the period, that it has been continuously increasing up to the crisis. And then, you know, I can show you, because I haven't got the time, similar but less pronounced financial shares from other countries. Germany, China are three examples which I have chosen, but there are many, many other examples. In Germany, and according to the OECD in 2008, income inequality over the years 2000 to 2005 grew faster than any other OECD country. In China, the top 1% income share has gradually risen from 2.6 in 1986 to 5.93. And in China also, financial intermediary shares to GDP increased from 1.6% in 1980 to 5.4% in 2008, according to Greenspan. And the then chairman in this country of the Financial Services Authority made the following point. There has, and I quote, there has been a sharp rise in income differential between many employees in the financial sector and average incomes across the whole of the economy. Unquote, and that was Turner a couple of years ago. In 1997, the value of financial transactions was about 15 times the world's GDP. Currently, as we talk, or at least according to Wade in his paper in 2012, the same one is almost 70 times. From 15, it went up to 70 times. Such high concentration enables financial firms to influence and shape public policy in line with their interest. Even today, the power of Wall Street and the City of London remains largely intact, despite the Great Recession. Examples, there are many, but two are of particular importance, and that is the Dodd-Frank Act of July 2010, and part of it was the Volcker Rule in the United States, and the Vickers report in the UK make the point very, very well. What happened with these two acts, if you like, is that the Dodd-Frank, it began in December 2009, with the specific instruction to see the extent to which they could reintroduce the Glass-Steagall Act. And the Wall Street people just revolted. And the implication of that was that it changed completely. From the reintroducing the Glass-Steagall Act, it ended up with the commercial banks and the investment banks should not be allowed to use deposits which are guaranteed by the bank. They were not allowed to use more than 3% in terms of investing it for speculative purposes, which is nothing really. They can do what they did in prior to August 2007, even with that restriction. Also, the Vickers report, which ring-fences government guaranteeing deposits, again, it doesn't imply anything of the kind in terms of restricting banks to do what they had been doing prior to August 2007, because still they can go ahead and do it. What you really need is to separate them, as the Glass-Steagall Act did in 1933. I think I have to stop there because I have no more time, but I hope what I have said is persuasive, that financial liberalization helped income distribution to create this financial innovation, and along with other contributory factors, created this Great Recession. Have we done in America, here, or in Europe, for that matter, anything that it might stop the next crisis? And I regret to have to say no. But the justification of that big no, I hope we have another conference to do it. Thank you very much.